Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. The last few weeks, we've had interviews with Dr. Jerry Bergman, and he is an academic. And we know that there's a crisis in academia in our nation, in America, but also around the world. And so to talk about that, it's an area that I don't have a lot of firsthand experience. I attended Arizona State University for a while. I got hired by McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company as a software engineer. That destroyed my college career. But I had also before that been at a Bible college in New York State, Nyack Bible College. But what an honor to have again in studio, Dr. Jerry. Dr. Bergman, how many PhDs do you have?
Well, I have two that were completed. I have one in chemistry, which Grant ran out, so I wasn't able to complete that, although I did most of the work. And then another I was working on in sociology, which is...
Wow. So two completed PhDs.
And two almost.
Two almost completed PhDs and other degrees.
Right. I have 9 degrees total, the equivalent of 20 master's degrees, if you counted the hours. I have 1,026 credit hours.
Wow. And you taught at the college level, medical school, a large college for how long?
40 years. 40 years total.
40 years. So I think you're a good person to talk to about the problem in academia. But could we start early? This whole phenomenon, which I'm really a fan of having our kids become an apprentice and working with a builder or working with an engineering firm. But obviously, we need higher education. So where did this whole concept start?
Well, it started really with a church, a Catholic church in Europe, where schools were formally started. Now, before that, of course, there was, you might call them schools, although I wouldn't call it schools, but there was tutors in Greece where they had teachers, professors, and
sure,
they would basically help students understand.
And that goes back to Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. And we do our Bible tours of different countries every few years. Mm-hmm. And we've been to Greece, and in Athens, when you're up on the Areopagus, Mars Hill, and you look down, there's this gorgeous reconstructed building that the U.S. taxpayers paid to rebuild it, tens of millions of dollars, and this huge colonnaded porch. And in Greek, you know, I got to study Greek at Bible college, and since, the Stoics are named after the Greek word for porch because they would stand on the porch and they would talk to whoever was gathered, and that was the Stoics. So you're saying they weren't really colleges where you signed up and you got degrees and you took all these different courses and subject matter.
That's true. It was mostly dialogue. Socrates is famous for teaching by the Socratic method. That's why we call it today, because he used it. But basically, it was conversations.
Okay.
And that you have conversations with others, and then some write, some wrote books relative to their findings. But mostly it was thought, a lot of thinking, a lot of reasoning. They didn't do much experimental science back then. Mm-hmm. They basically reasoned using ideas and logic.
Mm. We had a debate against the King James only advocate. We had to go to Oxford to do some research, and it was really an awesome time, my producer and I. But that's one of the oldest schools in the English-speaking world. It might be the oldest, Oxford.
Yeah, Oxford, right. One of the oldest, and that was another university that was started by the churches. And basically, the whole purpose of universities was originally to teach priests, ministers, and those individuals involved in church educational projects. And so that was the original founding. That was the purpose. In fact, university basically means they cover everything within God's creation. They study God's creation.
Wow. Yeah, Oxford, I think Christ Church is there. And today, that's the set for the Harry Potter movies, you know, in the big cafeteria. So these universities were started, just like Harvard, Princeton, and Yale, with the purpose of training ministers of the gospel, a lot of these schools.
Exactly. And they stress science, both in the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, is because studying science was a means of studying God's creation. Mm. You learn about God by studying what he did. You learn about a painter by studying his paintings, a musician by studying his music. And so likewise, they studied the creation, and that would reveal a lot about the Creator, which it does.
Wow. And then also in the time of the Reformation, there were so many schools established where they studied theology and they studied language for Hebrew and Greek, for the languages the Bible was written in, and also the classics. They did go back to Plato and Aristotle, but they would have those three schools within a university.
Right. And so more today, a university refers to having different colleges. So you might have 10 colleges, and all together they would be a university. Mm. College of Education, College of Natural Science, College of Medicine, and these together would be called a university.
Okay. So we're coming forward in history then to America. We got the Ivy League schools, and they were really a resource for the body of Christ.
Very much so, and that was the purpose of their founding. Many were founded by ministers, like Harvard was founded by a number of clergy. And, of course, John Harvard, the school is named after, was a minister who gave his library to Harvard, and that's how it got the name Harvard.
Mm. One of our families at Denver Bible Church, we're a small neighborhood homeschool church, all the families homeschool. We were planted about a generation ago, so a generation of kids in our small church grew up, and one applied to was accepted at Harvard Law School. He became the editor of one of their two law journals, quite a paper on the personhood of the unborn child that's being used in the federal court system today. And now, you know, he's a successful young homeschool dad himself.
Yeah, homeschool kids have done quite well, partially, I think, because individual education, you can focus it on the child's needs and interests and so on. And, of course, the motivation will be the parents, et cetera. Whereas in schools, there tends to be, since I've taught at all levels from kindergarten actually through graduate school, and a major problem we have is motivation. They're there because they have to be. They want to get this piece of paper. They want to graduate so they can get a good job. Mm. And it's probably about 10% at most students at most colleges are really highly interested in what they're learning.
Wow.
They're subject-oriented, and that's—
One out of 10. And sadly, the teachers are there primarily because they're getting paid. Very few, if they stop getting a paycheck, would keep teaching.
That's unfortunately true. And what surprised me, both when I taught at Bowling Green State University and Northwest State, was that they just don't do much reading outside of, well, the newspaper. And, for example, you look at interlibrary loan. Who is checking books out of the libraries around the country? And I found not many people. At my last school I taught at, we had maybe three people, and that's all, who would use interlibrary loan, which
wow.
indicates, of course, that they were interested
yeah.
beyond what the college...
We use that here at Real Science Radio to prepare for our programs.
Well, that's good. But
yeah, but it's not a common phenomenon, even on a college campus.
No, they teach their subject matter, and many of them know their subject matter quite well, but that's it. They're not really interested in many things beyond what they teach. Mm. In fact, many just teach what they teach because that's what they teach, not because they're interested in it.
Well, in all the millions of people who've gotten degrees, teaching degrees in the last 50 years or more. I had a friend who wanted to be a math teacher, and so she's getting her degree in education, and she's now in her last year, and she said, well, I never took a single class in math, and that's what I want to teach. And they said, you don't learn the topic you're going to teach. You learn how to teach. And Jerry, I've taught at different levels, not officially, formally, but people paid a lot of money to come and hear me teach. You don't have to spend 4 years learning how to teach. That's crazy.
Right. And many of the best teachers never had a course in education. In fact, that's a cliche that, gee, you must have gone to college to learn how to teach, and that's why you can't teach. And that's primarily teaching.
I've never heard that, but yeah.
Well, primarily teaching is interest in your subject matter and enthusiasm which you can impart to students. So if you love your subject matter, know your subject matter well, and can express it enthusiastically, that generally is what makes a good teacher. When I taught, I stressed dialogue. I did not want to get up there and lecture for 2 hours. I basically tried to draw the students into what I was talking about. And after a while, you learn how to do that fairly well, because certain things, hot button issues, you can bring up and students respond, and therefore you can dialogue. Mm-hmm. Although some of the courses I taught, like biochemistry, there's not a lot of students who could pick up that subject quite easily. So in that case, they had to spend more time just trying to understand the field, and you had to spend more time trying to help them understand the field of biochemistry.
Because Darwinism is true, and when you look into an organism, everything is very simple. Or am I being sarcastic?
Well, you're being sarcastic. And one thing they have a problem with is that the complexity of life is enormous, even bacteria.
Yeah, right.
When I taught bacteriology and microbiology and related courses, you get into the genetics of bacteria and they just are overwhelmed by it.
Yeah. When the simpler sciences got their start with chemistry and physics and Newtonian physics, and it looked like, hey, if you're good at math, you could figure this stuff all out. And then they get into biology where it's all information driven. And the complexity is beyond, you know, a single cell is far beyond the complexity of the International Space Station.
I would say that's a good analogy. That indeed is true. And that frustrates students, especially if they're just trying to get the piece of paper so they can get a job. So much today, education is certification and not learning. And therefore, I see that as a problem. And when we talked about reading, I remember one case in particular at Bowling Green State University when one of my colleagues, Jim Davison, mentioned he was reading a book about Edison. I'll never forget that because
Thomas Edison.
Never forget that because I was surprised that here's a professor actually reading a book. Not many did. At least not many did outside of their field, and not many did in their field. And so that was encouraging.
A couple times our sons played hockey, youth hockey, travel hockey, and we'd go to Sarnia, Canada, Port Huron, Michigan, big Silver Stick tournament up there every year, international tournament. And there's a rail car. It's a little tourist section. And Thomas Edison, when he was a kid, he would collect the newspapers on the trains that passengers would leave. And he'd go up and down from there to Detroit and he'd sell these papers. He was such an entrepreneurial, industrious kid, even as a kid. And then anyway, it's pretty neat that you'd see a teacher reading something outside of their own discipline, but you think it's a pretty rare phenomenon.
From my experience, it is. And I find a big problem today, a major problem in universities, which is now widely recognized, is the political correctness, especially when what they believe is appropriate is clearly contrary to the evidence. We were talking about marijuana earlier. That's a good example. Mm. Another example is this transsexual concern. Now, there's a lot of studies on transsexualism, and they know that in many cases, a person has psychological problems, adjustment problems,
right.
And then they end up assuming that, well, gee, if I was a female, wouldn't have these problems. And then they take hormones, they have surgery, etc., try to become a female, and then they find they have the same problems.
Yeah.
And so
the hormones are even dangerous. Jerry, we just had two guys, listeners from British Columbia on the show. They're trying to help a dad nearby them. He's been ordered by the courts not to refer to his daughter as a daughter. She's 14 years old. If he uses a female pronoun, he or she or her, that he'll be arrested. This is by a superior court judge in British Columbia. And that they're giving his daughter hormones against his wishes.
Yeah. This is tragic. It's already turning out to be tragic, and there's enough case histories now that illustrate this. You mentioned giving hormones. We know the effect of giving individual hormones is a problem. Long-term, big problem. Giving females testosterone and males feminine hormones, we don't know what the effect is long-term, but it's likely that this is going to have a drastic effect. Now, people say, well, these are natural hormones. Yeah, they're true. They are. But on the other hand— For the other gender. But we know that giving them— certain hormones, to bodybuilding hormones for males has turned out to be a problem.
Even though athletes do this, it's against the rules.
And even though it's a normal hormone they're getting, this these fairly various hormones, even though they're normal, but nonetheless they give larger amounts, and they've created a number of problems, which we cover when I cover biochemistry, that indeed this turned out to be a problem. So this is a great experiment, this transsexualism. Never in all of history have we endeavored to try to change someone's sex by hormones or surgery, etc. So my guess is, we'll see if my prediction turns out to be true, but that this is going to turn out to be an embarrassing tragedy. But yet, why is this pushed in universities as well as this judge, evidently? Because, well, it's a trend now. It's the people say, well, gee, I feel I'm really a female and I'm not a male, even though I was born a male.
Yeah. And I think more than just a trend, like pet rocks were trends, you know, but they didn't force them on people. It's part of the long war against God. It's rebellion. If, in fact, Jesus was wrong when he said that God made us male and female at the beginning of the creation, if he was wrong, then, wow, they have made a lot of progress in immunizing people from the gospel. And so I think we see in a lot of these issues, the things that the left will kill for, and a lot of these issues, at the root of it, is trying to undermine the Christian worldview.
Yeah, I'm sure that's behind it, although, again, it's a trend. And when I try to talk about this to colleagues, they basically say, well, they believe they're a female. They should be helped to become a female or a male.
Right.
And I say, what about the research? And so many of my colleagues are unaware of the research, and there's a lot of research done now and more being done all the time that indeed shows that this is a phase a lot of people go through. That's what Freud, of course, Freud's outdated now, I guess, but that's what Freud taught, that we all go through a homosexual stage, and we all go through a stage where we wonder indeed, was I really born to be a male or a female?
Well, and he might be projecting, you know, that's pretty common. And I don't think it's valid to say we all go through, but some people certainly may.
Yeah, he's not talking about a homosexual response. He's talking about we go through a period where we would rather hang around with guys than gals. And then when we grow out of that period, then we start hanging around with females more. And he said we go through this, and he explained homosexuality simply as we're stuck at an earlier stage of development. So he wrote quite a bit about this.
Yeah,
and I
now
think it's useful.
We've been reporting on this topic for 28 years here on Bob and Yurt Live. And Dr. Paul Cameron, do you recognize his name?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah, Family Research Institute in Colorado Springs. And he's pointed out, and we've had our own, although it's anecdotal evidence, I'll interview a homosexual and I'll ask him, when was your first sexual experience? And it turns out he's a young child and he was molested by an adult, somebody in his 20s or 30s or 40s. So many homosexuals, in fact, we've said for years, homosexuals reproduce sexually by molesting children. Not all, but there's a significant percentage who do.
And that's exactly what the research says, which I studied 35 years ago.
Wow.
So that's nothing new, including a number of people who themselves identify as gay.
Right.
Sagarin, for example, he's done a number of studies on this, and he came to the same conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly you can't accuse him of being biased against what he claims is his own sexual orientation. So this is well documented, and this is my experience as well, my clinical experience in working at Arlington Psychological Associates. This is what I gleaned from the patients I worked with, as well as from the literature.
Wow. So in academia today, there's a political correctness that is extreme intolerance.
It's exactly. And we're moved totally away from the original purpose and founding reason for colleges and universities. Mm.
What did you say before? The reason you can't teach, how did you put that? You said it's a cliche.
A cliche. If you major in education, you can't teach.
Right.
A lot of people feel what we should major in is the subject we teach. If we teach math, we should take pretty much a full load of math courses, maybe one education course, and that's about all.
Right, exactly. And education has become so expensive because the government has a hand in it.
Exactly.
If the government years ago said every person has a right to a computer, every person has a right to a cell phone, Obama tried to do that, then computers today would be lousy and they would cost 10 times as much.
That's a very good point, and that's one reason why education today is so expensive. When I went to school, not that many years ago, 40 some years ago, I remember my tuition, which I had to pay for, out of my own pocket was $270, $280 a semester at Wayne State University.
Wow.
And I could go through school with no loans, no, yeah. Wasn't in debt. And basically, I worked one day a week as worked in a transmission shop, and I made enough money to go through school. And I lived at home with my parents, so I didn't have that expense.
Yeah, but, that was wise.
But my son, he went going to Michigan State University and then University of Toronto and then New York University. He graduated and he got a huge amount of scholarship, hundreds of thousands of dollars of scholarships and
so on.
But he still ended up with $150,000 that he owed.
Oh.
And he went into area of art therapy, et cetera, art-related. And he had a hard time getting a job. So he had a hard time paying off this loan in time he did. But on the other hand, this was really a burden behind him. And one reason why it's so expensive now is because of government loans. Therefore, we can afford to pay higher tuition. Therefore, they can raise the tuition. So they do. So they bring in more money. And therefore, education costs more, not because it actually costs more, but as you said, because of government loans allows them to charge more.
Right.
Problem with education, too, a huge problem is in many schools, about half the faculty are part-time, and they make less than part-time wages. In many cases, if you look at the total hours that they put in correcting papers and so on, we find that they make well under minimum wage, and that's a big problem. But administrators, on the other hand, now their salaries have risen enormously, and many college professors who are at the top level and administrators end up becoming multimillionaires within a few years.
Where you need a tremendous amount of infrastructure to teach in the technical field, scientific fields, it's understandable that it could cost a fortune to get access to that equipment. But so much of teaching should be its books and its writing implements and its spending time with the teacher. And yet it will cost 10 times more to teach a kid in a public school in third grade, whatever, where there's 25 other kids in the class than a homeschool mom who's teaching one kid.
Yeah.
10 times more when it should cost half as much.
But most programs don't require a lot of equipment. Most programs, as you said, books, paper, and computer, and that's it.
Yeah. So today we have not only these trends that are somehow coincidentally, they're all based on immorality. The trends that are, there's an intolerance against anyone who doesn't think along the lines of the trend.
Very much so. And the best example is we've done a lot of studies, others have done, and as well as myself, studies related how many Democrats are there compared to Republicans. And generally, the ratio is like 20 to 1. In one college, it was 72 to 1.
Mm.
And so the vast majority of professors, the vast majority, are not Republican, but are Democrats.
Yeah.
And this is a problem because they get then biased instruction. They don't get both sides. And I think you need, well, nothing wrong with Democrats, of course, that's fine. I would make the same complaint if 99% or 95% of the professors were Republican. It'd be
the
same
problem.
Could
I object, Your Honor? Yeah. You said there's nothing wrong with Democrats. And so we have had a godless public education system for generations now where the schools are officially godless. It can't be claimed that I'm insulting them. That's their own policy. They are godless.
Yeah.
And we have had Christian parents and others by the tens of thousands in their local board of education meetings and their PTA, they become classroom helpers, wanting to help correct the system. And I would say from a bird's eye view of the last 60 years, it's been a complete failure. The schools are worse than they've ever been. And I think it's naive to think that we could fix the public school system. I think that's a naive goal.
Oh, I agree. It's very difficult. Not that it's impossible, but it's very, very difficult. And I'll give you one example I just read about was a student at a community college who basically was taking a course called mythology. And the professor in the class presented a number of myths, and one he presented was the myth of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ never existed. That was
a
myth.
Oh, my.
And so they were students.
This is a very well-educated professor.
Oh, yeah.
I've
had a doctorate. Had
a
doctorate.
Right, right.
So one of the students.
And I'm being sarcastic again.
Oh, well.
I mean, if he was actually educated, he could never utter such a claim, but
right.
Go ahead. I'm
he
sorry.
He was well-educated in his mythology, I guess.
Yeah, right.
But anyways, then he gave the students an assignment. They were to do a paper on any topic they wanted to, ideally on myth. And so this student decided to do a topic on Christ, that indeed the historical facts are he was not a myth. We have enormous evidence that indeed Christ was not a mythical figure. A real man by the name of Christ actually lived, and he wasn't trying to teach religion, but he was trying to basically show that indeed this man called Christ did live. Well, the professor stopped him in the middle of his presentation, told him he was not going to allow to finish, told him he was going to probably fail the class. He ended up being kicked out of the school because he was trying to present the other side. Now, this may be an extreme example, true, but on the other hand, it's not a really rare example.
No.
Many examples similar to that occur, which are not as extreme, but this is a good example because it is extreme.
Well, you know Dr. Jason Lyle. He's got a PhD in astrophysics from right up the street here from our studio at Boulder and University of Colorado, CU. And he had to be undercover throughout his entire college career because of his fear of being kicked out of the program.
That's very true, and that's very common. And that's not 100% true, but it is quite often true. When I speak at different churches, I mention that, indeed, if you want to survive academia, you're going to have to at least stay undercover or be very, very careful about what you say. I'll give you one more example at a college that I had a student at another college. And I asked him why he switched colleges from the other college to where I was teaching. And he said basically that the professor of biology the first day asked if anyone was a creationist or doubted evolution and to raise their hand. And so four or five students did. Then he asked them to stand up, and the four or five students stood up. And then the professor said, "You are going to flunk this class. I would suggest you leave now, because to do well in this class, you must accept evolution, that indeed all life evolved from primitive organisms and through natural selection and accumulation of mutations." And therefore, this person did not actually leave, but did not do well in the course, and after the semester transferred from the school he was going to the school where I taught. And he mentioned this simply because I asked him, why did you leave this other school?
When I hear a story like that, Dr. Bergman, I always wish that I could have been that student. You know, I just have this passion to fight these battles and say, "Professor, I care about you enough. I want to disabuse you of your ignorance, so I've got to stay here.
Yeah.
Where else in the world could I possibly go?"
That would probably guarantee you'd be out there in that actual class.
Yeah,
you wouldn't even
Could
be allowed to finish that.
But let him kick me out.
But
so
this was a good student, a quiet person.
Let him
throw
me in jail.
Yeah, well,
it's happened before.
Yeah. Well, this was a good student, and so he was quite tactful, and basically he just resigned and transferred to another school. That's how he responded. But I thought that was really crass of the teacher doing that.
Of course.
Indeed, that's
utter intolerance.
Intolerance.
Yeah.
That's an extreme example.
It's a hatred, right? Hatred.
Exactly. And it's, again, extreme example, but it does illustrate the problem.
Well, you've written a series of books, three volumes. You and I interviewed you, Dr. Jerry Bergman, when the first was published, Slaughter of the Dissidents, Volume 1, The Shocking Truth About Killing the Careers of Darwin Doubters. But then you've published Volume 2, Silencing the Darwin Skeptics, The War Against Theists, and then Volume 3. And each of these are serious, well-documented texts. Volume 3, Censoring the Darwin Skeptics, How Belief in Evolution is Enforced by Expunging Dissidents.
Yeah, so yeah, I said 30, 40 years researching this, and I have probably three file cabinets full of documentation relative to these cases. So it's not rare examples. It's quite common. Not every case, of course, comes across every person, but nonetheless, it's a big problem. And it's a problem that I think the colleges have to deal with, but as you said, it's not likely they will. How it'll be dealt with is people not attending the major universities and going to private or small Christian schools.
Yes. And that's one of the reasons so many schools are established, because people who are responsible and well-educated look around and see the political correctness, the fake news that's being taught through the curriculums of these schools that actively oppose the gospel, and they think, we need a new college.
Right. And that's ironically how Yale started, because Harvard became too non-Christian, too, I hate to use the word liberal, but too liberal. And so Yale was started to deal with the falling away at Harvard of these major Christian values. And so Yale then taught these major Christian values, of course, and now they've likewise fallen away.
They've fallen. When Jesus said, you cannot put new wine in old wineskins, the obvious interpretation is he's talking about the blood of the new covenant couldn't fit within the symbolism of the old covenant because it would burst out. It's God himself giving his life for us. But there seems to be a secondary application where the wineskin is the infrastructure to share the gospel. And we create Christian hospitals, publishing houses, music labels, we create universities, but eventually you can't put new wine in old wineskins. They pick up the influence of the world, even in the way their board operates, their everything. Only the gospel's the gospel. The buildings and their procedures are not. Those things get old, and pretty soon there's a greater commitment to their procedures and their infrastructure than there is to the gospel. And so it's mostly a lost cause. Could we win Harvard back? I think not.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be a wise goal.
I agree, especially when they put so much money into buildings, and now the trend is to do online courses. Mm. And the college where I taught, we spent millions and millions on buildings, and they're hardly used because now a good deal, maybe much as half of the courses are taught online.
Yeah, and that's actually a good development as we battle this war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you one cliche, which was mentioned by a professor that I knew. And he said, our goal as professors, no matter what you teach, is to make students as unlike as their parents as possible. And indeed, that's what I have seen. They want to make them unlike their parents as possible.
You heard that, because we've said on the show that it's a war against the authority of the parents.
Right.
And the authority of the church, of course. But so you actually heard that.
And this was
verbalized.
A professor. This was his goal. And he taught mathematics. And I said, how in the world can you do this in math? He said, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it in math. Side comments and the problems we work on.
Yeah. And the entire curriculum is atheistic. In fact, we have on Real Science Radio, RSR goes to math class, rsr.org/math. And it's astounding how much you learn about the creator when you study math.
Oh, yeah. Well,
astounding, but not in his class.
Yeah, not in his class.
So, Jerry, we are out of time. One last question. How about the kids who go to college? You said 90% of them are not really eager to learn the subject matter.
Right.
But the kids who go, it's a social time. It's putting off actually working for 4 or 6 years. And they get drunk and they smoke pot. And it's immorality. To me, on the outside looking in, that's a big problem.
Extremely big problem. And I've seen this over and over where parents work so hard, they save money up for years, they send their children away to college, and they come back strangers. And you really have to wonder, is this really the wisest thing parents can do?
Augustine wrote that in his book, Confessions of Augustine. He said, my mother, who was a strong Christian, she wanted me to come to Jesus Christ in salvation. He said, but her main goal was that I go off and study, you know, philosophy. And he said, my mother didn't realize that my teachers did everything they possibly could to get me to reject the gospel.
Yeah, even way back then. That's true.
Back then. Well, Jerry Bergman, thank you again. What an honor to have you in studio. And I appreciate your life's work. It's just awesome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your appreciation.
All right. You're welcome. So this is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
talking about.